It's the Sound Kitchen.
Mmm, yummy.
It's the Sound Kitchen.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
You're listening to the Sound Kitchen.
Yummy.
And Susan Owensby is cooking.
Bienvenue and welcome to the Sound Kitchen, where you never know what you'll be served. I'm Susan Owensby. It's Saturday, the 19th of April, the 109th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 256 days left until the end of the year. We have two new RFI Listeners Club members to welcome, Jocelyne Derrico, a French woman who lives in New Zealand, and Alexander Konak from Zaporizhia, Ukraine. How about that? Welcome, Jocelyne. Welcome, Alexander. You know about the RFI Listeners Club, right? It's an RFI-wide club for all the languages, and you can be a member too. Just write to me at english.service@rfi.fr and tell me you want to join. I'll send you a membership number. It's that easy. When you win a Sound Kitchen prize as an RFI Listeners Club member, you receive a premium prize. Jocelyne, Alexander, be sure you join the RFI English Listeners Forum Facebook page. That goes for all of you. The RFI English Listeners Forum Facebook page is open to everyone, member or not, and is the place for you to share with your fellow listeners. Just go to the page and ask to join. I'll approve you, and then off you go. You can post videos and photos, talk about your clubs, whatever it is you want to. Well, as long as it's not political, commercial, or offensive. And your posts must be in English. Those are RFI rules. Listeners, my stock of your music requests is getting low. Send your request along with why you like it to english.service@rfi.fr. The address again for your musical requests is english.service@rfi.fr.
You're listening to The Sound Kitchen on RFI.
The Sound Kitchen team is complete. Erwan Rome is at his mixing board behind the glass window in front of us. And our co-chef Paul Myers, also known as Baby Brother, is right here next to me. Say hello, Baby Brother.
Hello, Big Sister.
Ooh, Paul. I read this article in the New York Times this week. Uh-huh. Researchers, and I can't remember where. I think they were in Australia. They had some little tiny sharks.
Yeah.
And they were moving them from one place to another.
Yeah, go.
And they made a noise.
Yeah.
And this is amazing because apparently sharks they never knew how sharks communicated with each other. Mm-hmm. They don't make noise.
With their jaws, isn't it?
It was, they think it was clacking their teeth. It was kind of, and they're on the Times, there's the little sound bite, and it was kind of.
Okay.
And they're not sure if it's because they only did it when they were being moved. So they're not sure if they're just, you know, like us, when they say my teeth chattered.
Yeah. When you're cold, though, isn't it?
And when you're cold. Okay.
So they, what they need to do now is get the sharks back into the water, their natural habitat, and listen to see if they make the same sound.
I guess. And see when and the reaction from the other sharks.
And people are being paid money to do this or they're paying money to do this. And this will bring us what exactly to the summation of human knowledge? Sharks speak.
Okay.
I'm going to eat that baby. You can eat that one. Okay.
Well, okay. So that's out there. People are doing that. You know, we should have a bonus quiz question about weird jobs.
Oh, no, 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 that's weird.
Pretty weird. No, you're at a cocktail party and you say, what do you do? Oh, I study sharks, teeth chattering. Come on.
No, it's information which will come in handy at a certain point. And I only say this because I know this is going a bit onto the land, that I was talking to one of the chaps at church the other day, and he was talking about being in the British Foreign Legion. He's talking about these generals from the Second World War. And one of the great British generals, who was called Field Marshal Montgomery. And so all we young Brits grew up knowing about the exploits of Field Marshal Montgomery. And the fact, and there was, I was reading something a couple of years ago about Montgomery, and the fact that he had a dog, and he called his dog Rommel, which was in fact his arch enemy in the German Wehrmacht. And this apparently was absolutely part of Montgomery's sense of humour. And this bloke was telling me, oh, you know, Monty had this really sort of bizarre sense of humour. And I said, yeah, he named his dog Rommel. He said, exactly, you see. So I was carrying around this useless information for about 5 or 6 years until this conversation. So to link it all back, sharks chattering will come in handy at some point.
Okay.
So keep it in there.
I'm trusting you. I'm trusting you on that one.
Yeah. You'll think of me.
Okay. I will.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
On with the show. Still to come, the quiz, your answers to the bonus question on the Listener's Corner with Paul, and a tasty musical dessert from Erwan on Music from Erwan. So don't touch that dial.
Are you ready? I do hope so.
And so do I, cuz it's time for the quiz. On the 22nd of March, I asked you a question about Paul's article that profiled seven-time Olympic medalist Kirsty Coventry, the most decorated African in the 129-year history of the Games. Kirsty Coventry was one of the candidates vying for the presidency of the International Olympic Committee, which was decided a few days after the podcast, and she won. She's the first woman and the first African to hold the post. Congratulations, Ms. Coventry. You were to reread Paul's article, Zimbabwe's aspiring Olympic supremo Coventry targets development of athletes, and send in a list of the medals the swimmer won along with the dates of the games in which she won them. Paul, what's the answer?
As I wrote, in 2004 at the Athens Games, she won gold in the 200 meters backstroke, silver in the 100 meters backstroke, and bronze in the 200 meters individual medley. In Beijing, 4 years later, she retained her backstroke title and claimed silver again in the 100 meters backstroke, as well as silvers in the 200 and 400 meters individual medley. In addition to the quiz question, there was the bonus question suggested by Alan Holder from England's Isle of Wight. His question was, do you believe that people have a sixth sense? That is, an ability to know something without using the ordinary five senses of smell, sight, taste, hearing, and touch. Can you recall any personal experiences to justify your belief? You'll hear the answers later in the Listener's Corner, so please do stay with us.
The winners of this week's quiz are RFI Listener's Club member Dipita Chakrabarty. Dipita is also this week's bonus question winner. This is what she wrote. As a woman, I believe that we have more experience in social situations and possess a strong intuition called the sixth sense. I have experienced this myself many a time. By judging the attitude and mood of my husband, I adjust myself and thus avoid any conflict in our day-to-day life. I should do that, Dipita. Once he was in an unusually jovial mood for several days, treating my son and me with good words and gifts. My sixth sense indicated something good was coming his way. On the fifth day, he spilled the beans. He was being considered for a promotion to the post of joint director in his office that would boost his career. Congratulations, Dipita, on your double win. Also on the list of lucky winners this week are RFI Listeners Club member Bidhan Chandra Sanyal from West Bengal, India, and Paresh Hazarika, who's a member of the United RFI Listeners Club in Assam, India. Last but not least, there are RFI English listeners Kondika Rafikal Islam from Naugaon, Bangladesh, and Ahmad, who's a member of the International Radio Fan and Youth Club in Kanawal, Pakistan. Congratulations to this week's winners, and thanks to each and every one of you who wrote in. Sadly, we've lost a Nobel Prize-winning author, the Peruvian Mario Vargas Llosa. Author of acclaimed novels The Time of the Hero and Feast of the Goat, Llosa died this past Sunday at his home in Lima, Peru. Our very own baby brother wrote an article about the author. Nobel Prize-winning author Mario Vargas Llosa dies aged 89. I want you to take another look at his article and send in the answers to these questions. In which year did Llosa win the Nobel Prize for Literature? And what did the Nobel Committee write about his work? Again, reread Paul Meyer's article, Nobel Prize-winning author Mario Vargas Llosa dies aged 89, and send in the answers to these questions. In which year did Llosa win the Nobel Prize for Literature, and what did the Nobel Committee say about his work, their reason for awarding him the prize? You'll find Paul's article on the Sound Kitchen page on our website, rfienglish.com, as well as on the Sound Kitchen and the RFI English Listeners Forum Facebook pages. Paul, what's this week's bonus question?
What are the obstacles that impede your happiness? What gets in the way for you? What takes you off the path of happiness? Thanks to Erwan Rome for his suggestion. This was the philosophy question on the 2018 French baccalaureate exam, which is the French leaving school exam.
Okay, baby brother, spill.
We're going to get metaphysical because I don't think I've ever managed to untie the obstacles from happiness. I am a happy-ish person, and I believe the obstacles, there are no such things as obstacles to happiness. There are states of happiness. So I don't really see, if I get around that, I will have happiness. I try to exist in a state of happiness, and if the inverted commas obstacles come, I see that as part of the path of my happiness rather than something to get around, because I want to stay on the path of happiness. And if I deviate from the path of happiness to get rid of the obstacle, there'll be a deviation. So that's it in a nutshell, but it is a bit more complicated than if I have lots of money, I will be happy. And I think that's probably my shortish answer without a glass of wine.
Or two.
Or maybe whiskey.
Know, I think I'm pretty much on the same wavelength as you are, as usual, because I would say obstacles to my happiness are things that I create.
Yeah, okay.
Are they in my head? Uh-huh. Obsessing about something stupid. Any time worried about the future, all those kinds of things create unhappiness. And so, to sound like the good hippie I am, if I stay in the moment, I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm happy. So it's not a different, because, I mean, what do I have to be unhappy about? I don't live in a war zone. I live in a functioning democracy. Mm. I have a house. I don't have any trouble buying food. Yeah. I mean, what in the world do I have to be? My husband is sweet. My daughter is blooming as a young adult. I mean, what do I have to be unhappy about? So I create things.
To be unhappy so that you can conquer them?
Just when I say, oh, well, you know, what am I going to write on my show this week?
That's creative tension, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. It's a good question.
It is a good question.
Yeah. It sets off on many paths. And obstacles, happiness. Does one really need to be happy? Should you be content and not look for the extreme of happiness? I mean, if you're content, is that happy, or is that it's a lesser state than happy?
Okay, because listeners, in French, the French will rarely say je suis heureux or heureuse, I'm happy. They say je suis content, I am content, which is actually far more reasonable than, I mean, happiness, schmappiness, what's happy, I won an award, and that lasts about 3 minutes. But contentment is a... Anyway. Listeners, you're going to have fun with this one. So, tell us, what are the obstacles that keep you from being happy? Answer in your own words. Do not use AI. Your answer will be disqualified immediately. Remember, we're always happy to hear your ideas for bonus questions, so please send them in. You have until the 12th of May to get your answers to the quiz and the bonus question in. Be sure to tune in on the 17th of May to hear if your answer wins a prize. As always, be sure you include your postal address with your postal code, and don't forget to let me know if you are a Miss, a Ms., a Mrs., or a Mr. I don't want to get it wrong.
Send your quiz answers to english.service@rfi.fr. That's english.service@rfi.fr. Always include your postal mailing address, and if you have one, your RFI club membership number.
Hello, I'm Jean Deloisy from the Palais de Tokyo, and you listen to the Sound Kitchen.
And now, more from and about you. It's time for the Listener's Corner. Take it away, baby brother.
The question you answered this week was, do you believe that people have a sixth sense? That is, an ability to know something without using the ordinary five senses of smell, sight, taste, hearing, and touch. Can you recall any personal experiences to justify your belief? It was suggested by Alan Holder from the Isle of Wight in England. Let's start with Mr. Holder, who wrote, I most certainly do believe the sixth sense exists. On many occasions, I have a feeling of dread that something awful is going to happen to me. And almost always, something such as an accident or some other bad news comes my way soon after, usually on that same day. It's really uncanny and makes me think that there is a lot about the workings of the human mind that is yet to be discovered. Jayanta Chakrabarti wrote, I am sharing a heart-rending incident that confirmed my belief in the sixth sense. I was on an office tour to the southern Indian city of Bangalore with a colleague. We received an urgent message from our office to return a day before the scheduled date. As no confirmed tickets were available on the railways, we went to the bus station to try our luck. There, also, all tickets were pre-booked, even for the late-night bus. However, the ticket conductor, noticing our urgency, gave us an option to sit in the front beside the driver, a space usually reserved for the helper. However, my sixth sense warned me to decline the offer, despite my friend's insistence, and return to our guest house. The next morning, I learned that the same bus had had a head-on collision with an oil tanker, badly smashing the front portion where we were offered seats. Nazir Mohammed is also a believer, and this is what he wrote. I don't know if seeing things in dreams fits in with what you requested, but for most of my close relatives' deaths, my sister had dreams indicating that someone important was going to die. I'm happy I don't receive similar notifications. Malik Allah Bashaya Kokar also believes and thinks it is related to faith. This is what he wrote. The sixth sense comes from a belief in God. I can't touch, smell, taste, hear, or see God. Nevertheless, there is a connection that I perceive. God gives me laws that I must follow. I know that all the tasks and trials in life come from God, but I can't perceive that with my other five senses. Debashish Gope wrote about his experience. One day, a man was drowning in a pond, and I suddenly jumped into the pond and saved him. I think it was my sixth sense that triggered it. Radhakrishna Pillai wrote, "Yes, I do believe in a sixth sense, but I do not have any personal experience. I have heard about people's experiences through different mediums." Father Stephen Wara is on the fence. He wrote, "I think this is only a speculation theory and one that is highly controversial. I have had no personal experience of it in any domain, so I have nothing to justify."
I'm going to jump in here because, Father Stephen, the Holy Cross brothers who educated me used to say, one of them in particular, sweet brother Simon Scribner, may he rest in peace, loved fantasy literature. And he would say, "Do you believe in the ultra natural God? Do you believe in God? Okay. Then you must also believe in the supernatural. Ghosts and goblins and gremlins and..." So that's a Holy Cross Brothers take on it, Father Stephen.
Which we have seen. I do believe. Anyway, we'll end with our realist Helmut Matt. And this is what he wrote. "No, I don't believe in a sixth sense, although it is repeatedly claimed and many people believe in it. But people believe in all sorts of things, both possible and impossible, including ghosts and flying witches." I'm going to have to say, why do witches have to fly?
yeah. Well, gosh, what about Halloween?
I believe in witches, but not flying witches.
Oh, I believe in flying witches.
That's ridiculous.
Look at them all over the place. So the sky is filled with them on Halloween.
Witches, yes. Flying witches, nah, that's taking it a bit far. And there you have it. Remember, everyone, this week's bonus question is, what are the obstacles that keep you from being happy? And thanks to Erwan for the idea. Do you have a bonus question idea? Well, if so, send it to us at thesoundkitchen, all one word, no spaces, at rfi.fr.
And a reminder, it is very easy to spot the AI-generated answers. They are bland and impersonal. They sound completely American. And they often have cultural references that do not come from your country. Bland and impersonal. The complete opposite of what the Listener's Corner is all about, which is you. What you think, what you have lived. AI-generated answers are disqualified. That's it for today's Listener's Corner. Thanks, everyone, for participating. And a special thanks to Paul Myers for hanging out in the kitchen with us.
Been a pleasure. I'll be flying out of here on my broomstick.
आप सुन रहे हैं सोजन ओवेन्सबी को साउंड किचन के साथ.
Okay, my friends, it's time to clear the table and wash the dishes. Thanks for joining us in the Sound Kitchen, and keep those cards, letters, and emails coming. Many, many thanks to our sound engineer, Erwan Rome, for his input and his expertise in putting the show together. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure and tune in next week, April 26th, for the answer to the question about French winemakers. The Sound Kitchen podcast is ready for you every Saturday on the RFI English website, rfienglish.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'll play you out with music from Erwan, our sound engineer, who's also a musician. This week, Erwan chose music by the Italian composer Antonio Vivaldi, nicknamed the Red Priest for his red hair, and yes, he was a Roman Catholic priest. He was born in 1678 in Venice and died in Vienna in 1741. He was a prolific composer, 500 concertos, 46 operas, as well as a slew of sacred music. His best-known work is a set of four violin concertos called The Four Seasons, each depicting a season. You've probably heard them. You have on the Sound Kitchen. Erwan chose a less well-known piece, the Concerto for Bassoon and Orchestra in A minor. Scholars think it was probably written between 1720 and 1724. And as our scholar, Maestro Erwan Röhm, told me, I love this. The composition, the singular sound of the instrument, the various rhythmic patterns used, the colors and variety of orchestration in each movement. It's such a modern piece, and it's 300 years old. I bet you'll love it as much as Erwan does. Here it is, the Bassoon Concerto in A minor by Antonio Vivaldi, performed by bassoonist Daniel Smith with the English Chamber Orchestra conducted by Philip Ledger. Thank you, Erwan, for another musical journey. I'm Susan Owensby. Be well, do good work, be kind, and stay in touch. And remember, do not confuse human beings, our brothers and sisters, with their governments. Stay safe, my friends, and be a blessing. Be a rainbow in someone's cloud. Talk to y'all next week.
Thank you. The number of 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 the number of